So, Rachel?
Yeah?
Kira and O'Brien try to rescue a famed Bajoran resistance fighter from a Cardassian slave labor colony in an attempt to bring peace to the warring Bajoran factions. What do you think you're going to get?
Kira, O'Brien, Bajorans, we must be back to Deep Space Nine, Chris.
Yeah!
Well, someone's got someone pregnant.
What? Why?
The prisoner has fallen in love with someone.
Oh.
Kira's gonna get angry. Sisko's gonna tell someone off. Quark will show us another rad jacket. Those are my guesses.
That sounds like Deep Space Nine to me. Let's find out.
Rachel watches Star Trek.
Quark?
Oh, not now, Odo.
We have to talk.
It'll have to wait.
It can't wait.
Of course not. Make it fast. I have business to attend to.
You remember that subite freighter we were discussing the other day? The one you claimed was smuggling defective isolinear rods to Bajor?
Yes, yes. What about it?
Well, I conducted a little investigation of that freighter, and do you know what I discovered?
That I was telling the truth.
That's right. I arrested the first officer and two of the crew.
Congratulations, Constable. I knew you could do it.
Oh, what's going on?
Oh, I'm excited. We're back on Deep Space 69.
Cheeky.
Oh, Deep Space Nine, obviously. We're kicking off season two with the Trek first. While the episodes aren't labeled as such, there's actually a three-parter.
What?
Yes.
Yes, sir, we got a three-part show, three for the price of one.
This episode is called The Homecoming, and it was written by Jerry Taylor and Ira Stephen Bear. This is Taylor's first Deep Space Nine, though we know her well, obviously, from TNG.
Too well.
The Drumhead, The Outcast, Aquiel. Future Deep Space Nine showrunner Bear's fourth Deep Space Nine episode. He also wrote TNG episodes Yesterday's Enterprise, Captain's Holiday, and Cupid.
Mm-hmm.
Helmed by the prolific TNG director, Vinrich Kolbe, his third Deep Space Nine after Past Prologue and Vortex.
That better be good then. Odo can't figure out why Quark would give him a genuine tip-off, and Rom's confused too. It's easy to explain, though, if you know the rules of acquisition. Cue song!
All Ferengi know the rules of acquisition, the rules of acquisition, the rules of acquisition. All Ferengi know the rules of acquisition, the rules of acquisition, the rules of acquisition. Making sure that the bribes get paid, the art of the trade, how the profit gets made. Ferengi know it's their mission to live their lives by the rules of acquisition.
Well, since we've had that, eh?
Yeah, I didn't realize until Albert pointed it out to me that that is parody of the Hamilton song, so.
Well, you can thank Rafe for that one.
Thank you, Rafe.
Quark quotes the 67th rule of acquisition. Every once in a while, declare peace. It confuses the hell out of your enemies. Quark runs into a sultry purple-haired woman he apparently knows well. How are your lobes? She asks. Ooh! Tingling at the sight of you, he says. Law. A maintenance worker on Cardassia 4 gave her a Bajoran earring to deliver. He said whoever she showed it to would understand. Quark says he'll take care of it. And he actually does.
Yeah, strangely.
Although I think he's going to see if he can get some money for it.
Yes. Quark drops in on Major Kira at her quarters, interrupting a private worship ceremony.
I thought she was just seeing how long she could hold her arms up, sort of to make sure she don't get soft, you know?
Why can't it be both?
Can't.
He makes it creepy, so she just gives him 5 seconds to tell her what he wants. Kira's tossing him out when he shows her the earring. She takes it and seems very concerned and then just rushes out. Sisko's having a father-son talk with Jake. He's asked about a Bajoran girl and wants to take her on a date to a holosuite. And Sisko's like, whoa, you're too young for that, buddy. Jake says, well, can we go to our quarters? And he's like, nope, can't do that. It's got to be out in public.
How old is he? Is he only 12 or something?
No, he's got to be 13, I'm thinking.
You're so appalled that it was 1 year out.
Well, 12 to 13 is a big difference.
Yeah.
His voice is changing, but hasn't fully changed. Maybe 14.
Where would you let our kids go on a date? If he wanted to have somebody over here, we'd let him, but then not if we weren't there.
Yeah, but and then, of course, not in his bedroom with the door closed.
Yeah. Do you agree with Sisko?
Well, it depends on what they do in the holosuite. If they go to the holosuite and they do, like, skiing or, you know, some kind of holonovel that is age appropriate, then
yeah.
you know, I don't see a problem with it. But I guess if you don't know exactly what they're doing in the holosuite, it could be Rigelian orgy.
Oh, surely there's some age controls on the holosuite.
I don't know.
Suites.
Yeah, there should be. Yeah.
I mean, there must be. And there's characters keeping an eye on them. Does that make a difference if they're holo people out in public with them versus regular people that know them?
Yeah, I guess. Well, holo characters are pretty limited from an intellectual standpoint for now, but that changes throughout the course of Star Trek, where holo characters get their own personalities and become people.
Well, they've already been sentient by now, yes. But not very often.
Yeah, not very often. It becomes a bit more common later on.
Do you think they dob you in if you're a 13-year-old getting it on?
Well, if they've been programmed to.
In a holo shopping center.
If you're the holo cock blocker, then yeah, of course that's what they do.
Well, yeah, as a parent, you could put some holo cock blockers in there.
Yeah.
Job done.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's not Jake's fault that he lives on a station, is it?
No. Kira tells Sisko that she needs to speak with him. Jake says, you know, it's okay. You're not ready to deal with this stuff. So conversation over. And he's like, well, wait a minute. It's pretty good stuff. I like that. And we get this.
So, Major, what can I do for you?
I need to borrow a runabout.
For what?
You really don't want to ask me that.
It's too late. I already asked.
You don't want to know the answer.
Major, I can't loan you a Starfleet runabout without knowing where you plan on taking it.
To Cardassia 4 to rescue a Bajoran prisoner of war.
You're right. I wish you hadn't told me.
There's some good scenes here back to back. It's just nice to see Sisko in a light mood. Things are okay right now.
They are okay right now.
The earring belongs to Lee Nalas, the greatest leader of the Bajoran resistance. Sisko's heard the tale of how he defeated Gul Zaral in hand-to-hand combat. He was reported killed in action, but no body was ever found. The Bajoran government won't do anything. They don't want to provoke a war with Cardassia over an earring. But since Kaiopaka's death, the political divisions on Bajor have got worse. Riots are breaking out. The Bajorans need a leader they can trust. And Kira knows that's Lee Nalas. O'Brien interrupts. He needs Sisko and Odo on the habitat ring. There's something they need to see. Do I get the runabout? Kira asks. Sisko says he'll think about it. Someone's graffitied the wall with the symbol of the Circle, an extremist Bajoran faction who believe all other races are inferior and should be expelled. Yeek! The symbol's all over Bajor, but it's the first time Odo's seen it on the station. Sisko wants to know if it shows up anywhere else and says, as of now, Constable, there are no low security areas on this station. Ooh, what's that going to mean for Odo?
A lot more work for Odo.
He's going to have to be slipping around, morphing into all sorts of stuff. He's not going to have much time in his bucket, is he?
No, poor
guy. But he needs it.
Yeah, he does. He has to have it.
We all need a balance in our lives.
Exactly. Thank you.
Maybe some new recruits are needed.
Yeah. Sisko goes to Dax for advice.
Why does she look weird?
What do you mean?
Think she looked weird? It looked like someone had got slap happy with the fake tan.
Huh?
She's patchy.
I did notice that. The turmoil on Bajor threatens what they're trying to achieve. What would she say if he knew somebody that could bring stability to Bajor? I'd say give Kira the runabout. So she told Dax.
That was a fun scene that made me feel glad to be back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now he's concerned that if they help Kira rescue Lee Nalas, what do they say to the Cardassians? She counters with, well, what do the Cardassians say to us? They're not supposed to have any Bajoran prisoners of war anymore.
Oh.
And he's like, yep, good point.
Oh my goodness. Let's do it. It's awful.
Sisko tells O'Brien that she's going to need to runabout, and he goes, oh, she's going to Cardassia 4. He's like, what? Who didn't she tell?
Loose lips. Yeah. Sink ships.
O'Brien says he's already modified the runabout so that they won't be detected as a Federation ship.
He's made it look like a different alien ship. He was obviously convinced that Sisko would say yes then, eh? Sisko sends O'Brien with her as pilot, and Kira is not into it. But Sisko needs Lee Nalas back on Bajor as much as she does. And O'Brien knows how Cardassians treat their prisoners and wants to help. Kira sets one thing straight. Either they come back with Lee Nalas or they don't come back at all. What does she mean?
That they will die.
Die trying.
Yeah.
God. She bluffs their way past a Cardassian navigation control post to Cardassia 4 and locates the labor camp. And the Cardassian who'd hailed them was being very nice, offering to help repair their ship and so on.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. Well, do we trust anyone?
That might not have been a completely genuine offer. It might have been, let us fix your ship and see who you are and what you've got on board and whether or not we can take it. And
yes, I started to feel nervous at this point.
Well, that's the point.
Yeah. Sensors show a dozen Bajoran prisoners, no way of telling which is Lee Nalas. They've no option but to land and check it out. Oh dear. Costume change. Yay. Kira looks great in impossibly high-waisted trousers. She's a real long body, isn't she?
She is. Yeah.
But those things are more waist than leg. And a 90s hippie crocheted cardigan, which I would have worn in the year of filming. An overseer approaches and O'Brien tells him Kira has an appointment with the prefect. And we get this.
What would it cost me for an appointment?
More than you could afford.
Two strips of gold-pressed latinum. She's all yours.
He wouldn't know what to do with me.
She needs disciplining.
From a boy like you? I don't think you're capable of it.
Step back. I want to examine what I'm paying for.
Sure, sure, but no sample of the merchandise until the sale's complete, okay?
Now, show me why you're worth two strips of gold-pressed latinum.
All right.
Again, those improv classes paying off, so they must have given her some Starfleet ones, I guess.
Yeah, what's the Deep Space Nine improv troupe called?
Because... Salty Knuckles.
Oh, I got it. Whoops, improv.
She gives him the old cleavage reveal uppercut. Kirk should have tried that on the Gorn. Classic move.
Gorn's like, ooh.
Oh,
rest. Wait a minute. The easily conned overseer is played by John Fleck, who played several Trek aliens, including Romulans Tybeck in TNG's The Mind's Eye and Koval in Deep Space Nine Season 7, but most notably the Soliban Silic in Enterprise. Mm-hmm. Who's like, he's a big villain.
Oh, okay.
So he's on there quite a bit. Taking out two more guards, Kira and O'Brien find Lee Nalis, who is confused as to what's going on. His friend tells him that he smuggled out his earring that he thought he'd lost. Lee Nalis is played by Richard Boehmer. You may recognize him as Benjamin Horn, I did, from Twin Peaks. Or you might expect him to start snapping his fingers for a rumble with the Cardassians as he was Tony in the 1961 West Side Story.
He was?
He was.
God, I didn't recognize him at all.
Well, he's much older.
And actually, Tony wasn't trying to start a rumble. He never did those dances, so...
All right, I don't know West Side Story as well as I should. His friend, named Borum in the script, is played by Michael Bell. Imagine him cleaner and with long gray hair shouting threats at the walls. It's Groppler Zorn from TNG Pilot Encounter at Farpoint.
That was way too many years ago, yeah. And I have no idea what you're talking about.
The human that was basically enslaving the alien that was the city.
No.
Rachel's just looking at me and shaking her head. I have no idea what you're talking
Thanks
about.
Thanks for trying. As they flee with the Bajoran prisoners, more guards appear and open fire. Lee takes a phaser blast in the back. Knowing they won't all make it back to the ship, Borum stays behind with three others to hold off the Cardassians. Oh, so brave. Mm. This guy really wants Lee to get to safety.
Yeah.
What's his deal? Is he just a really nice friend? Lee protests, but Borum says they did all this for him.
Mm. Mm. Do you know why he's so excited about this and doing so much for him? It's motherfucking Lee.
As the four prisoners fight a rearguard action, the rest board the runabout. O'Brien detects two Cardassian warships entering orbit. If they don't leave now, they never will. Kira makes the hard decision. Take us home, Chief. From a horrible place, which you'd expect a labor camp to be, they were all scrabbling around on their knees, totally dirty, picking up stones and putting them in baskets. And they've been doing it for years.
10 years.
Kira rushes into Sisko's office to find Gul Dukat on the line, delivering a formal apology. The Cardassian government had no idea there were still Bajoran prisoners on Cardassia 4. The remaining prisoners are already on their way back to Bajor. Sisko congratulates Kira on the rescue, but she's suspicious, as are we all. Why are the Cardassians being so accommodating?
Bashir's treating Lee's wound as a history buff. He's read about Lee's battle with Gul Zerahl and some of his campaigns, which he felt were truly remarkable. Lee tells Bashir that others enjoy talking about those days, but he does not. Both my grandfathers fought in the war. They never talk about it.
But at this point, we think that's just what he means. That yeah. It's better buried and too traumatizing. Nice, quick scene that makes Bashir look quite insensitive, actually, yeah. And gives us a taste of Lee's story and character.
A cleaned-up Lee Nalis joins Sisko and Kira on the promenade. He has been on the station before, working in the ore processing plants. Minister Jaro has arrived from Bajor. Kira goes to meet him as Sisko takes Lee to the Replomat. But as people start to notice him, he tells Sisko that he'd like to go rest. Hmm. They turn to leave, but a crowd has already gathered. Kira meets Minister Jarrow at the airlock, and he is freaking Frank Langella.
Did recognize him.
Yeah, Dracula, for crying out loud.
Oh.
He took the role because his children loved the series and chose to be uncredited as he didn't want people to think he did it for the exposure or the money.
Why does that make any difference? Your face is right there.
Yeah, that's stupid. An actor of many notable roles, including his Oscar-nominated performance in Frost Nixon, The Americans.
What have I seen him in, though?
Oh, you saw him as Skeletor in the live-action Masters of the Universe film.
I did not.
That's your favorite movie. You watch it every weekend.
Jarrow tells Kira that her stunt rescuing Lee made her some enemies in the Chamber of Ministers. Officially, he warns her that if she pulls something like that again, it'll be the end of her military career. Unofficially, thank you. I realized that I felt tense by this point in the episode, like something terrible was about to happen. Mm. I'm not sure why, but I just thought somebody was going to betray or murder someone's going to die in an accident or something. Well, did you feel that?
Yeah, they're building tension, but we don't know for what yet. And of course, this is a three-parter, so we don't really get any answers.
Reluctantly, Lee steps out to address the crowd, saying it's good to be free. It's good to know that after all our years of struggle, Bajor is finally free. Of course, he didn't know what the situation was. It was very different when he got captured.
Yeah.
Minister Jarrow welcomes Lee home, but as Jarrow sings Lee's praises, Sisko notices he looks uncomfortable. Mm. Sisko takes Lee to his quarters. Lee thought people would have forgotten him by now. He was a slave this morning. Now he's a hero. He asks Sisko what a free Bajor is like. Sisko thinks he'll be pleased for the most part. It lacks strong leadership. Sisko suggests he get a good night's sleep before saving the planet tomorrow.
That night, Quark is counting Latinum as he divvies up the bar profits. One for Rom, six for Quark. Rom shows some gumption and complains that it's not fair, and we get this.
You're right.
I am?
Yes. It's not fair.
It's not?
Absolutely not. One for you, and seven for me. One for you, and seven for me. Is that better? And where are you going?
To bed, to dream of an equal share of profits.
Dream on. What is it now?
What?
Quark.
He's just been attacked by some people wearing masks. Quite creepy ones, too.
And they burn his head with something.
Speaking on the Delta Flyers podcast, Armin Shimmerman said he hated this Latinum scene, saying, "This is just me being ugly. It hurts me as Armin to portray Quark that way. That's an old stereotype that I think has worn out by now." Did feel off.
Yeah.
He's doing things in a more complex way. And he was saying in the interview, apparently, by Ferengi standards, he is a moral person because to acquire is moral. I don't know if that extends to stiffen your brother out of most of his share.
I mean, having allies is good business. And if you treat your business partners well, then you'll get more business.
Yeah.
As a Ferengi, I would think being fair is actually pretty important, but you know.
And people get paid different amounts.
Sure.
Based on many things, but would he lord it over him every single time by counting it out like that? Well, Armin didn't think so.
No. In medical, Bashir is healing the circle symbol that has been branded into Quark's head by those creepy masked figures.
What does it feel when you're branded and you should be a man?
Do you do when you're branded and you know you're a man? Lee asks who these masked figures are, and she says, oh, they're Bajoran nut jobs. And he goes, they're Bajoran? Why would they do something like that? And she explains that the circle is this organization that are all racist. They are actually getting things done on the planet, so people are really supporting them and they're growing in power.
Oh no.
Someone needs to speak out against the circle. Someone the people will listen to. Hint, hint, hint. Sisko finds Glum Jake sitting in their quarters. His date is off. Turns out her father, Bajoran, doesn't want her dating a non-Bajoran. A call comes in from a freighter docked on Pylon 2. Turns out they were headed to the Gamma Quadrant, and they had a stowaway. And the stowaway, Lee Nalis.
What? My big baby.
Sisko has Lee brought to his office and is like, that ship was going to be gone for 2 years. And he goes, yeah, I wanted it to be gone forever.
Where's Deanna Troi when you need some counseling after a 10-year trauma and don't really want to be the center of attention?
Yeah.
I get why he wanted to escape, but maybe give it a bit of thought first.
Or give him, 24 hours.
Just stay in your room for a while if you're not bothered. Lee tells his hero's story. The resistance cell he was part of was ambushed by Cardassians. Only three of them escaped. As he had the only working phaser, he scouted ahead to make sure the coast was clear. We get this.
Halfway down the embankment, I slipped. Went sprawling on my back down to the edge of the lake just as a huge Cardassian emerged from the water. He must have just finished bathing. He stood there, frozen in surprise, dressed only in his underwear, shivering in the cold. I lay there looking up at him, too stunned to even move, and it was only when he reached for a phaser rifle that was lying across his clothes on a nearby rock that I realized that I was still holding my own phaser, and I shot him. His body fell on top of me, and that's how my companions found us a moment later. One of them recognized him as Gul Zurael, responsible for the massacre of half a dozen Bajoran villages. Now, I tried to tell them what had happened, but they had already convinced themselves that I had killed Zurael in some kind of a savage struggle, which is what they insisted on telling every Bajoran that we met.
He's all Paul Bunyan, you know?
No, I don't.
A figure from American folklore who's a giant, and he had a big blue ox, and there's many tales of him doing extraordinary things.
Well, the tale grew with every telling. Before he knew it, every victory won by the resistance was attributed to his leadership. It even followed him into the labor camp. Yet he had done nothing but shoot an unarmed Cardassian in his underwear. I'll never forget the look on his face as he died, he says. He was so embarrassed. Lee doesn't want to be a slave to his reputation any longer. He's not the man they think he is. Sisko counters that they don't need a man, they need a symbol. And that's what he is, a symbol of strength, honor, and decency. Lee says it's based on a lie, but Sisko corrects him. It's based on a legend, and legends are as powerful as any truth. Bajor still needs that legend. It needs you. Ooh.
Later in Ops, Sisko and Major Kira greet Minister Jaro and Lee Nalis as they step off the elevator, and we end with this.
Commander, Minister Jaro, Lee.
Navark Lee, as of yesterday's unanimous assembly vote.
Congratulations.
Navark, there's never been one before. They felt any existing title was inadequate, so they created a new one for me.
I hear that thousands of people showed up to greet your ship when it arrived on Bajor.
Yes, it was quite a celebration. I wish I could have stayed longer.
Why? What stopped you?
The Navark needed to return here to assume his new post. He's been made the Bajoran liaison officer to Deep Space Nine.
I already have a liaison officer.
Not anymore, you don't. Major Kira is no longer assigned to this post. She's been recalled to Bajor.
Oh, what? Kira! She really has pissed some people off, hasn't she?
So I guess that's it. She's off the show.
Kind of got the impression she was on for longer than this.
Yeah, well, as we saw at the end of that episode, she's been fired.
She's out. Spin off.
Let's get into concepts.
Well, they're throwing a lot of storylines and concepts at us here, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness it's a three-parter. But it did start feeling long when they introduced yet another one. I'm just going to have to keep up with it.
Yeah.
For some reason, even though it was very good, I was like, really? Are we only 30 minutes into it still?
Oh.
Jake's growing up and Sisko's torn between being cool dad, advising him on romance, and protective dad.
It's the plight of every parent.
He's got to evolve with him, but not let him grow up too fast or inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Bajorans in crisis and needing a leader. They need a hero.
Woo!
But Lee feels unworthy of the title. And Sisko says they need you anyway, so just pretend. Because the power of legend. They got to believe in you and they got to believe in themselves, man.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're just going to go further down this xenophobic route.
Yes. And he seems like a moral guy, fortunately, that he's not the guy that's going to go, oh, well, actually, all non-Bajorans are horrible. So, I'm going to go join the circle.
How does Sisko know that, though?
Well, I don't know how he knows that.
Really encouraging this guy to step up. We don't even know if he's worthy.
Exactly. But it seems like he is because he's pretty horrified when he hears about the circle. We know at least he's not racist. But then again, somebody like that can be used. And I think maybe that's what we're going to be seeing here with Frank Langella.
Yeah.
Jaro is going to use him for his own political ends. Now, whether that guy's moral, which I'm feeling like he isn't.
He just make me worry.
Yeah.
And we've got jeopardy of peace with the Cardassians. They have invaded and stolen their prisoners, but then again, they weren't supposed to have any prisoners anymore.
Yeah.
It was resolved by the Cardassians pretending they had no idea, and now they've released them all. Mm-hmm. So sorry. But of course, We don't trust that, do we?
How does that hold any water? There's like Cardassian soldiers like on that planet. There were Cardassian warships that showed up once they, you know, like...
They were all going rogue. I had no idea.
What? Yeah, that's intentional that the Cardassians are slimy and we're getting class A slime here.
Yes, but the actors, including Langella, they're all playing it straight as though these could be good characters.
Yes, but it is Frank Langella.
Is he always a baddie?
Well, Skeletor.
Wow.
Dracula.
Yeah.
Come on.
Xenophobic Bajoran factions going around tagging and wearing creepy masks. And it's created a West Side Story situation for Jake.
Oh, no.
Bajoran dad won't let daughter date him.
Wait, isn't that really a
Romeo and Juliet? Sure, but we've got Tony from West Side Story.
Okay,
yeah?
Yeah, you're right, you're right.
Plenty to chew on, and it's going to take me a while to reinvest, I think, which isn't this episode's fault. And the concepts will pay off later. We don't know how.
Right.
So for now, I say 7.
Okay. I think there's some really cool concepts, but we're laying some groundwork here. I agree that 7 seems to be right. And for episode 1 of season 2, I think it's pretty strong. Mm. I remembered how much I liked these characters.
Yeah.
Michael Piller tasked the writing staff to focus on the uniqueness of the Deep Space Nine setting for this season and let go of the links to TNG. As a result, they went for a season opening story that could only be done on Deep Space Nine.
Because it was all about Bajorans and Cardassians?
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Ironically, though, this story had its roots in one of Jerry Taylor's TNG pitches. What? Where the Enterprise encounters a Bajoran woman on a mission to rescue a leader of the Bajoran resistance, but found they didn't want to be a leader anymore. Ira Stephen Baer amended it to be a mistaken leader, based on John Ford's 1962 movie, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, exploring the idea that a legend could be more important than the reality behind it.
I see that, and they did a pretty good job with it.
Entertainment.
O'Brien came off well, which was nice to see. Mm-hmm. Everyone did.
Yeah.
Good to be back with sweet Cisco as
oh,
well.
Oh, man. Cisco
before
and
everything
Jake
goes wrong.
Gives me the feels every time.
Little sweethearts.
They love each other so much.
Oh.
And not afraid to show it.
Good. The blue alien woman was cool.
Yeah.
Convincing dialogue and solid performances all around. Enjoyable Cisco Dax scene where we hear Kira's been telling everyone about the earring. I wasn't bored, but again, I did feel endless for some reason. The threat I felt coming never arrived, except that Kira's leaving, of course.
Yeah.
But maybe some of them were pretending to be goodies and it'll all come out later.
I
surely
so.
Some of them, if not all of them, were.
Sure.
I'll go 7 again.
Yeah, it's a pretty solid 7. The labor camp wasn't just fictionally grueling. Filmed in Soledad Canyon, north of Los Angeles, the crew call sheet warned of snakes, bees, and other hostile insects. Oh. Nana visitor remembered the real enemy being the heat. Calm and I were sick to our stomachs. We were seriously wondering if we were going into heat prostration. It was the perfect Cardassia 4 because it was like hell.
Oh, gosh.
Guest actor Michael Borum recalled it was so hot his Bajoran nose ridges kept melting.
Oh, no.
God, what about the dude in the Cardassian makeup?
Oh
my God.
Oh, how awful. They must have been powdering them down just constantly. Oh. Good job.
Zach Hanlon of the AV Club found the homecoming solid if unspectacular. The performances are good. The episode never feels overly padded in the way that multi-part Trek episodes so often do. But thought it was a little low on energy and threat. That's what you said.
Hmm.
The threat wasn't really there. We were building to some threat, but
I felt it, but that never quite happened. Keith R. A. DeCandido on Reactor liked that it focused on the core Deep Space Nine theme of Bajor's recovery from the Cardassian occupation, and that making the story a three-parter gives it chance to breathe. He praised Richard Boehmer's low-key performance as Leen Alas. Might have did a really good job,
yeah.
Particularly his delivery of the great battle with Gol's Aral story. And noted that both Alexander Siddig and Terry Farrell seemed more comfortable in their characters than last season. They were barely in it.
Yeah, I know.
Mm. Warp factor 9 from him. Jammer's reviews called it a knockout season opener that covers quite a bit of ground stylistically and dramatically, and agreed about the three-parter length, comparing the pacing to a feature film, with the first installment setting up the story perfectly, 3.5 out of 4. Sexiness. Dax's dodgy makeup, everyone else looks great. 0.5 for Kira's trousers, 3.
I'm going to give it a 3 for sexy alien lady.
Oh, yeah.
She was pretty foxy. Stupid
experts. But then the lobes thing brings it back down, doesn't it?
Oh, well.
Kira's quick thinking on the runabout when the Cardassian hailed. Very good.
Yeah.
Although quite a lot of gaps that they didn't call her out on, thankfully, while they discussed it.
Yeah.
O'Brien configuring it to look like an alien ship from their sensors, but not very well, maybe. I don't know.
He's having a problem there. But yeah, not bad. I'd say Stupid Experts is fairly low.
Yeah, we'll give him a 0.
Your guesses?
Someone's got someone pregnant. Well, they might still have. We don't know how this is all going to pay off, but...
Yep.
For today, no.
No.
The prisoner's fallen in love with someone? No. No. Kira gets angry? No, not really.
Yeah, she gets passionate, but not angry.
Yeah. Sisko tells someone off? No.
No.
Quark shows us another rad jacket. Nah, jacket was meh.
Oh, wow.
So that's a zero.
0%.
0% going in score.
Not great for the first episode.
My predictions were much more TOS, even not even TNG, than Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Well, I want to thank our patrons for all of their support. And of course, I'd like to thank Rafe Ball for helping us produce this episode.
Thank you so much, Rafe. Thank you, lovely patrons. And we will be back next week with another episode of Deep Space Nine. What will happen next? Oh, woo!
And with that, I'm Chris Lackey.
And I'm Rachel Lackey.
And you've been listening to
Rachel Watches Star Trek.
Star Trek!